I don't know whether Barbara Arrowsmith Young is a keen watcher of Suits.
I am.
You are?
I am.
Should he persist with Suits?
Got yes.
Yes. So, obviously, does it get better after Series 1?
It definitely gets better.
Oh, it gets better after Series 1.
Yes.
See, I think in this day and age, Barbara, if you can't get me Series 1, come on. There's a lot of telly to get through.
That's true. But, you know, you should just stick with things, I think.
Oh, okay. So once you've started, how far do you go? Let's say a book, if you're reading a book. Mm. Do you read it to the end and then go, I didn't like it?
Not always, no. I will give it maybe 3 or 4 chapters.
3 or 4, yeah. I think that's reasonable. TV series?
I would give it maybe a season.
A season?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, that's a fair commitment. That could be like 15 episodes.
It could.
You know, the Scandinavian ones, they're a year and a half long, those things.
Late at night.
Nice to have you along. Barbara Arrowsmith Young is the author of The Woman Who Changed Her Brain and other inspiring stories of pioneering brain transformation. Plasticity is just all the go, isn't it? If we're not being mindful, we're being plastic at the moment.
It is. I mean, it's certainly been around for a while now. I think it's just that we're more aware of it. And certainly through Norman Doidge's book, The Brain That Changes Itself, it put the concept of neuroplasticity kind of on everybody's tongue. And I mean, it just means that our brain is capable of change as a result of experience, learning, and stimulation. And to me, it gives incredible hope for a lot of conditions that we thought were intractable. The area that I work in, learning disorders, learning difficulties. But also there's research now looking at chronic pain, looking at mental health issues, a whole range of issues that if we can use those principles of neuroplasticity to shape our brain, we can actually address a number of these conditions. Mm.
It is pretty fascinating that, like, in our lifetime, such a profound shift in how we regard our brain has occurred. You know, like, as you say in saying this, when you first started looking at this sort of area, the absolute standard orthodox scientific view was the brain is fixed.
Absolutely. When I started my schooling in the late 1950s and I had a severe learning disability, the belief was, yes, your brain is fixed. The brain you're born with is the brain that you die with. So if there's a problem related to your brain, you need to learn to accept it, to live within your limitations. And for me, it really felt like a life sentence in year one that all of my future was going to be a struggle. And I just felt there had to be a better way, and that was the quest that I set for myself over my lifetime, and found it through research coming out of Russia, brilliant Russian neuropsychologist understanding the functions of the brain, and then Rosenzweig's work at Berkeley looking at neuroplasticity with rats. And I felt if rats have neuroplasticity, surely humans must have neuroplasticity. Mm. So I set out to create my first exercise to change my own brain. So I was my own rat experiment.
you did it to yourself because of what had happened to you? What was happening?
Well, I struggled when I started in year one. I struggled to learn how to read, how to write, numeracy, and eventually I did learn those basic skills, but comprehension was profoundly impacted. So maybe what we would call auditory processing now, I would listen to language, and unless it was really concrete, like it's raining outside where I could paint a picture, I didn't understand. I couldn't understand relationships, fractions, you know, a part to a whole.
So if I said something like it's raining cats and dogs, that'd be confusing.
That would be confusing for me.
Right.
That
would, because wow, it's raining harder than it ever has before. Would that also be a kind of
well, even harder than it ever has before, because that's a relationship. Right. I would have to figure out, okay, what was before, but raining. If it's raining outside, that I would understand because I know rain and I could draw a picture. So it had to be very, very concrete.
So it's kind of like an over-comprehension almost. You know, you start thinking through every little bit of it. Or what did it feel like to you?
It felt like living in a fog. That's how I described it. I lived in a confusing fog where meaning just would constantly disappear no matter how hard I tried to understand. And I was afraid all the time because I was afraid someone would say something to me and I wouldn't understand. And then I wouldn't be able to engage in the conversation or the dialogue.
Yeah. The other compelling example you use is time, being able to read an analog clock, a circular clock.
Yeah, I couldn't tell time until I was 26. I could not understand the relationship between the hour hand and the minute hand because it was the part of my brain that processes relationships that was difficult. I didn't understand cause and effect. I really didn't understand why people did things because you have to make connections between behavior and outcome. I couldn't do that. So I lived in a very frightening, very confusing, very isolated world.
And no one, what sort of diagnosis would you get?
I think now it probably would have been auditory processing, maybe a little bit of dyslexia.
And what were you getting back then?
Back then, when I started school, they didn't even have the term learning difficulty. I was told I had a mental block, and right. I thought I had a piece of wood in my head, being a little concrete. Right. And in a sense, I had blockages, I was later to learn. But I also had spatial difficulty. I got lost all the time. I had what I call a kinesthetic problem. I didn't know where the left side of my body was in space. So I was constantly bruised and banged up. And so I wasn't good athletically. I wasn't good academically. I wasn't good socially. I mean, life was pretty unpleasant growing up.
Yeah. So you then you learn about neuroplasticity. You start to think maybe I can apply this to myself. And you gave yourself exercises. You taught yourself to read a clock.
Yes, I did. I mean, so that's what I started with. It wasn't so much that I wanted to learn how to tell time, but I wanted to find an activity that would force my brain to process relationships. And reading Luria's work, the Russian neuropsychologist, he talked about somebody with difficulty that part of the brain couldn't interpret time. So I thought, that's where I'll start with. And eventually I got better. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of hours where I could actually read a two-handed clock and see the relationship between the hour and minute hand. But I wasn't feeling cognitive change, so I kept adding more complexity, so more hands to force my brain to process more relationships. Mm. And so for me, it was when my brain was processing four relationships simultaneously that I got my breakthrough, where I could just start to listen to people talking and understand what they were saying.
So this fixed the other things. It wasn't just that you learned to read a clock. Other things started to fall in place.
That's right. And that's the principle of this work with neuroplasticity is you're not teaching a skill. So I wasn't really teaching myself how to tell time. That wasn't the ultimate goal. Mm. It was to make my brain work really hard at processing relationships. So almost like building a muscle in that cognitive function. So now I could understand mathematics. I could understand fractions as well as tell time. I before was vulnerable to con artists because you know you're being conned by hearing logical inconsistencies. So for me, there was no logic, so there was no logical inconsistencies. Right. Now I could understand if I was being conned. I had no sense of humor before because I couldn't understand irony in jokes. Now I could understand it. Like, it was like being blind and now I could see.
Yeah. And so like leaping forward to right now, do you function in the world much as I function in the world? As far as you can tell.
As far as I can tell.
As far as we can all tell.
Yes.
But
yes,
I mean,
no, I do.
We could let you go from here and you find your way to the airport.
Absolutely. I don't get lost. Yeah, yeah. I know where the left side of my body is in space. Right. I can interpret language. I can read a book and I can understand it as I'm reading it, whereas before I would have to read it maybe 10, 12, 13, 14 times to try to figure out what the author was intending or saying. To me, the remarkable power of this neuroplasticity is if we can understand it and utilize the principles, we can really change the face of education. And we're now starting to apply this in year one with just regular students
and you've seeing started benefits. You've started to set up schools as such. You set up your own school. Students come to you and...
And then we train teachers around the world. So I have my school in Toronto. There are 23 schools in Australia that utilize this program that the teachers get trained in the methodology. We support them, but they're teaching in the schools here in Australia. There are schools in New Zealand, the United States, across Canada, Malaysia, South Korea, Thailand that are all implementing this
program.
And what
sort of results are you seeing?
Really very positive. And what I'm really excited about is we're now doing some imaging research at two universities, University of British Columbia in Canada and University of Southern Illinois in the United States, where we're not only looking at outcomes, so cognitive measures, academic measures, and we're seeing improvements there in reading, writing, arithmetic, but we're now starting to see the changes that are happening in the brains of these students, better what we call executive functioning, so thinking, mental initiative, problem solving, planning, parts of the brain that are related to numeracy changing, thoughtfulness, thinking, abstract reasoning, all of that starting to shift, which is what I've been arguing for 38 years, that fundamentally we're changing the brain, which is leading to the behavioral and academic changes.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some critique that there's no scientific basis for what you're doing. It's yet to be peer researched. It's yet to go through that sort of process. Are you initiating that sort of process now?
Yes, it is underway with this research. I mean, we have a lot of research on our website that's been done. Some's independent, some has been peer-reviewed. But a large university study, like the two that are being done now, this is the first time that that's happened. And one of the studies it's totally independent for me, but the researchers are, this June will be the end of the second year of gathering data. So there are definitely going to be peer-reviewed publications coming out of this. And the one in the United States Absolutely. Mm. So I'm really excited.
And I mean, you sound like a scientist, as though, you know, you look at scientific research, you've based your own practices on scientific research. If the science starts to say to you, you're getting something wrong, what will you do?
Well, if they did, then I would start to modify and refine and change what we're doing. And to me, what is exciting, I mean, I've seen some of the initial data that's coming out of this research, and it's all supporting the past 20 years of research that we've been done that hasn't been peer-reviewed. So there's nothing that isn't confirming what we've already done. Mm. And, I mean, we've seen thousands of children through this program, and we knew what the trajectory would have been for them, the struggles and difficulties, just as it would have been for me. And we see where they are now. I mean, I've been doing this work for 38 years, so I think if there wasn't validity to it, I probably still wouldn't be carrying on.
It must be really exhilarating to have something like where it feels like it is such a profound change in the world, in our way of thinking. I mean, it would be one thing if you sort of like, it's in chemistry and it's the same old chemistry, but it's an innovation. This is kind of different to that, isn't it? It's like, you're embracing a whole new thing. You've brought a whole new thing.
I think it's a paradigm shift in science. It's a different way of looking at education. I mean, we learn with our brain. If we can actually change and enhance the functioning of our brain, I think we'll actually find learning easy and joyful.
You'll find all of this and more in The Woman Who Changed Her Brain by Barbara Arrowsmith-Young, and you can go to the website of Arrowsmith Schools. We'll get you there, Arrowsmith.
Arrowsmithschool.org.
Arrowsmithschool.org. We'll get you there for further information if you want to follow up on Barbara's work. Barbara, great to see you.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for coming in and for telling us all about it. Good luck on your trip here. I hope you can find your way out and all will be fine. Thank you, Barbara Arrowsmith-Young.